From WYPR, I'm Sheila Kast. We're on the record. Maryland's seafood industry depends on several hundred guest workers, most from Mexico, working half the year on the eastern shore to pick crabs. This year, few of those workers came. The seafood processing companies could not get enough H-2B visas. We asked Congressman Andy Harris, who represents the shore, any more visas on the way? Then Jack Brooks, co-owner of a seafood company in Cambridge, argues the shortage of foreign workers affects the security of American jobs.
For every H-2B worker that comes into the state of Maryland and working in these seafood companies, 2.54 American jobs are created or supported. Some of those jobs include fishermen, fishermen's helpers, the people who make the crab pots, the boat repair people.
It's on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at WYPR.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@WYPR.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Kast. We're On the Record. Landscaping, agricultural work, tourism, and picking crab meat. To fill these jobs, the United States depends on foreign workers who come here on temporary work visas known as H-2B visas. This year, Maryland's crab industry faces a severe labor shortage. Almost half of the workforce is missing because this year, H-2B visas were awarded by lottery rather than first come, first served, at a time demand across the country is at a record high. The number of H-2B visas is capped by Congress at 66,000. As some crab processors received no workers and may not be able to hire Americans to fill those positions, the effects trickle down. The Baltimore Sun reported that watermen may face a $10 to $15 million in lost crab sales. Joining me on the line from Washington, D.C. is Congressman Andy Harris, who represents Maryland's 1st District, which includes the Eastern Shore. Welcome to On the Record.
It's good to be with you, Sheila.
Are additional visas on their way?
I've been told by the Secretary of Homeland Security that they are. They're waiting, sign off on final regulations. Unfortunately, Congress took way too long to deal with this issue and waited until the omnibus bill when it really should have been dealt with in January and February, when we knew that there were over 80,000 applications for the 33,000 visas available.
And why is the number now being considered 15,000? Where does that number come from?
Well, that number historically is how many additional ones were issued in the past when we had some of the returning worker exemptions. That's the number that the Obama administration issued additional visas. Historically, that's the number that we're done. I think that in the absence of Congress designating a higher quota number, I think the administration honestly is reticent to increase the numbers when this is really the responsibility of Congress.
And is it your expectation that if the 15,000 materialize, they will be awarded by lottery?
The reason why the lottery was used was that the people who applied got pretty good at it, so the vast majority of these 80,000 were applied for in the first 2 days. Literally, the entire quota would have been allocated within hours of a midnight deadline. So the decision to then award by lottery actually made sense so that, if for some reason, your send button didn't work on New Year's Day, that you still had a chance to get the visas. What I'm promoting and what I'm going to try to write into this year's bill is actually a way so that when the need exceeds the number that will be issued, that you get a proportionate number. So, for instance, that no one gets none, because I think that's the problem. We now have businesses that have gotten none, and some businesses, honestly, who've gotten all the ones they requested. I think that's the unfairness here, not the use of a lottery system, but that's the unfairness that some got none and some got all.
Is this an immigration issue or a labor issue? Are these
it's both, and that's the problem. It obviously it got hung up. We actually had a bipartisan bicameral agreement on this, but it was blown up at the last minute when Democrats didn't want to do anything that had to do with immigration unless DACA was dealt with. So it got tied up in the immigration. Although again, this has nothing to do with immigrants. These are not immigrants. These are temporary workers. These are people who come here. When we have basically full employment status in the U.S., we need these temporary workers. We're not going to find Americans to do it. We honestly, our goal for American workers should not be six-month jobs. They should be year-long jobs. So this is a labor issue, and which is the other hang up is that unfortunately the labor unions frequently oppose any expansion of the H-2B program. Again, it's just unrealistic to think that we're going to have American Union workers filling a six-month job picking crabs on the Eastern Shore.
And so what of that explains why Congress sets the quota so low?
When we have high unemployment, 66,000 is probably adequate, but Congress set into law a number that is not flexible. And what we're going to try to do is we're going to try to rewrite in such a way that it actually is flexible. When we have high unemployment, the number of temporary foreign workers we need goes down. When we have high employment, like we do now, our need for temporary workers goes up, and it actually should be flexible. We've been fixing this through appropriations bills. It gets a little in the weeds, but that's not the way it's supposed to be done. We should come up with a plan that provides the flexibility of when to apply as well. You know, a lot of our seasonal work on the Eastern Shore don't need workers till May 1st, even June 1st, and yet they have to apply in January and pay the workers from April 1st, whether or not they use them. That makes no sense whatsoever. So there are a lot of reforms this program needs, and I look forward to working with the leadership, working with the administration, get these reforms done so that we don't have, you know, empty crab-picking houses next year.
I appreciate your points about flexibility, but it strikes me that certainty is also at issue here. This lottery system means the seafood industry can't predict the size of its workforce or its profits, whether they'll be able to stay open or not. So how does Congress create more certainty for American-owned businesses?
The Labor Department requires these companies to actually seek Americans out. Once they determine they can't find Americans, I think that if the Labor Department certifies the need, the visa should be issued. One way around it is to say that, you know, we exempt returning workers. You know, people who are worried about illegal immigration have no need to worry about returning workers. These workers have come in the past. They work here. They go back home. That's why they're called returning workers. These workers are at very low risk for overstaying a visa. And this all got caught up in this much larger discussion about immigration.
Congressman Harris, I appreciate your talking to us. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your interest in the issue.
Congressman Andy Harris is a Republican representing Maryland's 1st District, which encompasses the Eastern Shore of Maryland, as well as parts of Baltimore, Harford, and Carroll counties. This is On the Record on WIP. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about the shortage of labor in the state's seafood industry. Crab processors on the Eastern Shore rely on H-2B visas to bring in temporary workers from Mexico. These visas were awarded on a lottery basis this year, and several Maryland companies that applied did not receive any visas. I'm joined now by Bill Seeling, director of the nonprofit Chesapeake Bay Seafood Industries Association. He joins us from Annapolis. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
About 500 workers come to the state each crab season, April through November, for work. How long have businesses on the Eastern Shore relied on foreign workers?
Probably close to 25 years now. I think the program was initiated around 1990. I'm not sure the exact date. And originally, the crab processors that were operating were basically facing the prospect of going out of business because the local workforce has just basically disappeared, either through attrition, old age, moved away, whatever the reasons. But the roughly 55 or so plants that were operating in the Dorchester County area had dwindled rapidly. And those survivors were really facing a pretty daunting future without any workers. And then the government, as the old saying goes, in its wisdom, enacted this law to create this, you know, non-agricultural, you know, non-specialized work program for guest workers. And they had to actually go around and encourage people to use it initially. Nobody even knew about it. But one company on Hooper's Island, the A.E. Phillips Company, decided to give it a try, and it was quite a gamble because you had to invest a lot of money to get this kind of a program up and running. You had to, you know, provide housing and have a recruiting program and go through a lot of hoops to demonstrate that you actually needed workers and were unable to obtain local workers. But once you did all this and paid all the fees and so forth that were mandated, workers actually did show up at the A.E. Phillips' company plant and quickly demonstrated to everybody else in the industry that it was, you know, this was either do or die, basically. This was the last chance they had to provide a workplace. And so more and more companies decided to try it, and pretty soon it was the norm rather than the exception. A few companies decided they just did not want to have to do the, you know, the work that was involved. It was a lot of paperwork and the bother, and they decided just to go out of business rather than switch. So that reduced the work, the number of companies eligible to participate even further. So eventually about 15 companies ended up adopting the program.
This is the first year the H-2B visas were awarded through a lottery. How did the process work in the past?
Well, the process in the past was that the quota of 66,000 visas was divided in half. That was under Senator Mikulski's guidance. You can only apply for these workers a relatively short time before you actually are going to use them. It's not like you can apply a year ahead of time and make sure you have your quota allocated. By law, you cannot apply too early. If you do, you're disqualified. So by cutting the quota in half, our seafood companies could have a reasonable chance of getting workers. But you had to do everything right. The Department of Government is extremely vigilant on this program, and as they should be. Everything has to be on time and in order. And if that isn't the case, you go to the back of the line, and you're virtually assured of not getting any help that year. But so assuming you do everything correctly and have been a part of the program for many years, which all these companies had, you were, you know, basically went to the head of the line. But this year, the Department of Labor decided that instead of just awarding these visas based on longevity of use and on quality of the services that the companies had provided for their workers and so forth, they would have a lottery. And as a consequence, half of our companies almost are without workers this year.
For those crab processors that were not awarded any visas, do you think they'll be able to attract American workers to fill those jobs?
No. The first thing you have to remember about this program is you have to demonstrate that you are not able to attract American workers before you can even apply. You have to have a wage survey done to show what prevailing wage for your type of activity is. You have to advertise in all the local media. You have to offer a job, literally offer the job to anybody who walks in the front door and says they want it. You have to have all this done before you can even apply for the visas.
Some listeners may think you pay people enough and somebody will show up to do the work. Is it a matter of the wages not being high enough?
Well, as I said earlier, we do a survey to find out what the prevailing wage for certain types of activity are, in this case, crab meat picking. Secondly, most of these areas that require the workers are in very remote rural areas where there just aren't very many people. And we already face an extremely tough field of competition from foreign products that come into this country with no tariff from all the countries in the Pacific Basin. Every single island in the Pacific has a crab meat industry, and they all export to the United States. And they are much less expensive because the crabbers get paid virtually nothing for catching the crabs, and the workers get paid very little for processing them. So the second you try to raise your price above a certain level, you completely are out of the market, literally. I mean, who's going to pay $100 for a pound of crab meat? It isn't just a question of, you know, like doubling the wages that you pay or something, because at that rate, nobody will be in business.
Bill Sealing, I really appreciate your helping us understand it. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Bill Sealing is director of the Chesapeake Bay Seafood Industries Association. Short pause here on The Record. When we're back, we'll learn more about how crabs get to our tables from the co-owner of a seafood processing company. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. A severe labor shortage has hit the Eastern Shore seafood industry hard. For years, crab processors have relied on foreign workers who come to the U.S. for several months on a temporary H-2B visa. This year, visas were awarded through a lottery, and some of the state's seafood companies received none. Jack Brooks is partner and co-owner of J.M. Clayton Seafood Company, as well as president of the lobbying group and trade organization American Seafood Jobs Alliance. He joins us from Cambridge, Maryland. Thanks for being on The Record.
Well, thank you for having me today.
So J.M. Clayton is one of the four crab processors that received visa workers. How many workers did you apply for? How many did you receive?
The people who did win the lottery, if you want to use that term, because there are some terrible losers here. I don't think anybody's really winning. But they received the number of visas that they applied for. So if a company applied for 10 and they were included in the lottery, successful in the lottery, they got 10 visas. What you were certified for from the Department of Labor is what you got in the event that you were successful in the lottery, and yes, we were. We got 95 visas issued, and right now we have, I guess, about 75 that are working here presently. I'm sure we'll get some more in here before long.
Does that mean that your operations are pretty much running as normal?
Yes, we're running at normal right now. We have had a cool spring, which has slowed down the production of crab because the water temperature before they woke up needed to be about 52 degrees. But as we all know, living here in Maryland, this has been a cold winter and an extremely cold spring, and that has backed it up a little bit. But now things are getting back to normal with the crab production at least.
If J.M. Clayton Seafood Company had received zero visas, would that have affected the company?
It basically shuts you down. It shuts you down. All American employees don't have work. The people that rely on us for goods and services feel it. For every H-2B worker that comes into the state of Maryland and working in these seafood companies, 2.54 American jobs are created or supported by them. Some of those jobs include fishermen, fishermen's helpers, the people who make the crab pots, the boat repair people, people who make our boxes, which is they're right here out on our industrial park here in Dorchester County, the refrigeration people, the truck repair people, the truck drivers, and the list goes on and on. 2.54 Americans. So right now, with these four other companies that are basically shut down because of no workers, you have approximately 200 visas out there that they can't get them. So 200 times 2.54, you know, that's over 500 American jobs that are negatively impacted by the shortage of workers. So this is an American jobs issue. And when you don't have workers, it shuts you down. It's plain and simple.
And when you say shuts you down, do you mean permanently?
Well, it shuts you down at least temporarily. Now, if you can hold off and hopes that we have visas to get released, like happened in 2009, maybe you'll recover the remainder of the season. However, you lose customers, you lose suppliers, people lose confidence in you. The banks are looking at you saying, you know, when are you going to get some workers so you can catch up on your loans? And they have fishermen, too, that are not able to fish or crab regularly to pay their loans off, and so the bankers are worried about that as well. And in a small fishing community like we are here in Dorchester County, I mean, it's just devastating to our local economy.
Let me pick up on one part of that. What are you hearing from the watermen?
Well, they're not able to fish. The watermen who catch the bait, the menhaden that the crabbers use in their crab pots for bait, instead of working full days, they're on pound limits because they're not selling enough bait. And why are they selling enough bait? Because the crabbers don't have enough market. And why is that? Because we don't have the processors that are open to take these crabs. We're missing half of our capacity here.
So talk to me about prices. How do you expect the decrease in processing to affect the cost of picked meat and the cost of whole crabs?
Well, I think what we're going to have is an oversupply of crabs very, very soon, which we're experiencing now. And so that's the price of crabs started artificially high this year because of the cold spring that we talked about a few minutes ago. And the demand for the live crabs was great. Now the supply of the live crabs is coming up, and it's satisfying that demand for the live crabs. And then that's when all the processing companies, you know, these eight companies are so important to absorb these crabs and go ahead and pick that crab meat and sell, you know, what we all know as Maryland crab. And so we are seeing a decrease in the dock side value, and we're going to continue to see that, I anticipate, because of this lack of production capacity. And also, if we remove this whole visa program from the seafood processing industry, people will not stop eating crab meat. They'll just be buying their crab meat from places like Venezuela and China. Venezuela crab meat flown in every night fresh from Venezuela to Miami, put on a truck, and it's in Jessup the very next morning and being distributed to a restaurant and distributors near you. So we're going to be shipping more and more of these jobs overseas, and I don't think anybody in the government wants to do that.
That's Jack Brooks, partner and co-owner of J.M. Clayton Seafood Company, here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. He's also president of the American Seafood Jobs Alliance. We're talking about the shortage of H-2B visas for guest workers in the crab-picking industry. In the past, the industry had benefited from an exemption to the cap of 66,000 H-2B visas that covered returning workers, workers who had come before to pick the crabs and were coming back. What happened to that exemption?
In 2005, or actually the FY 2004, we first found out there was a cap to this program. Nobody knew. And for a decade or more, I think in Maryland, just seafood companies were utilizing this program. So then Senator Mikulski thought, well, okay, well, we got a program here. We got 66,000 visas that all are start to be handed out here in October 1, beginning of the fiscal year. So, okay, let's break that in half. Let's give out 33,000 visas for starting October 1, and then 6 months later, April 1, let's give out the other 33,000 visas. And that part of the legislation did not sunset, so that's still in effect right now. What she did do also was able to institute a returning worker exemption, and it lasted for 3 years. It basically exempted any returning worker that had been here one of the past 3 years from being counted toward the cap. And we have such a high return rate on our workers. I mean, that worked. A returning worker exemption worked. That solved our problem of no workers. They sunsetted that for 3 years, and the obvious question is, okay, well, we don't see this cap thing going away. Why would you sunset it for 3 years? And well, because we will have taken up comprehensive immigration well before then, and we'll have done with this visa and other visa programs by then. Okay, well, that last part hadn't happened. And then in 2007, I think it was, they got a one-year extension on the returning worker exemption. 2008 didn't have one. And I don't know what happened, but all the people here in Maryland got their workers. But in 2009, it caught up with us, and nobody got the workers. And with no returning worker exemption, we all got shut down. And, of course, in 2009, they applied for these visas in 2008, and we were right there at the economic downturn, and I guess all the landscape companies and everything, 25,000 visas had been issued, but they haven't used them because they didn't have the work. So the Department of Homeland Security reauthorized these visas to be available, not all of them, but 2,000 of them or something. And the only ones who were interested in getting them were the seafood people. So it was September when we got visas. So it was April, May, June, July, August. We lost the heart of our season. And since then, up until about 15 or 16, the visa cap did not come into play. But now, as the economy has rebounded, we knew it would raise its ugly head again, and it did. And it is just devastating our fishing communities down here in Dorchester County.
If the federal government were to reinstitute the exemption for returning workers, would that solve the problem?
That would be great. That would fix it. And Congress really should have corrected this and just kind of handed it off to the administration. And so the administration, they haven't done anything with it. We hear that they may be releasing 15,000 visas with 60-some thousand waiting. So what we're talking about is another lottery, more than likely, and probably a 20-25% chance that someone will be successful in that lottery. In our little community here in Dorchester, we got four seafood companies that don't have them. The odds are, in that scenario, one may get them. That's not a solution. I mean, we're grateful to have that, but come on, that's fully utilize the program. We've got a growing economy. We've got low unemployment. We need these workers to come in here to process this Maryland seafood and support these Maryland jobs, these American jobs.
Jack Brooks, I appreciate your walking us through it. Thank you.
Well, thank you. We appreciate your interest and look forward to talking to you again soon, hopefully when we have a solution to this.
Hopefully with some good news. Jack Brooks is co-owner of J.M. Clayton Seafood Company in Cambridge and president of the American Seafood Jobs Alliance. At the On the Record page at WYPR.org, we'll have links to additional reporting on the shortage of H-2B visas that the Maryland crab processors are facing. I'm Sheila Cast. Glad you've been with us on the record. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.